As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
I love the Raiders. Most of all, I love to win.
You're now listening to State of the Nation with Jimmy Durkin, Vic Tafer, Ted Nguyen, and Tashawn Reed on the Athletic Podcast Network.
What's up, everybody? Welcome back to State of the Nation here on the Athletic Podcast Network. Jimmy Durkin, Vic Tafer, Ted Nguyen, Tashawn Reed. And the Raiders, free agency has slowed down. Obviously, the big first wave is over. Last time we talked to you, the Raiders immediately after we got off the air, they went and signed running back Kenyon Drake, which sparked some reactions, some positive, some negative. We'll get into that a little bit later. But the biggest news of this week, the Raiders did lock up their left tackle. And this is something we talked about a few weeks ago on the show, that as they were making all those moves on the offensive line, freeing up money, getting rid of some of their veterans, that, you know, you can agree, disagree or whatnot, but John Gruden obviously felt they were a little bit overpaid and was ready to move on from that. They would have some future expenses that they needed to handle on the offensive line. And Colton Miller got a 3-year extension, I think $54 million on the extension. Basically puts him at an average annual value of about $18 million, fifth among left tackles. You know, for some people, they see that number and they think it's a lot. But I mean, that's basically the price of doing business when you have who you believe is your franchise left tackle and you want to keep him around.
Yeah, I bet they wish they went into negotiations before Trent Williams signed that deal, huh? He pretty much reset the market for top flight left tackles. You know, I'm sure, you know, Colton still would have got a lot of money, but I'm not sure if it would have been 18 a year if they had got it done beforehand. But like you said, even still, only ranks fifth. I don't know if he's, you know, the fifth best tackle in the league, but, you know, moving forward, I'm sure he'll continue to slide down that board as more guys can continue to agree to extensions and long-term deals. So I think it's a good value. You know, he's shown, you know, the last couple of years that, you know, he looks like a starter at that position for years to come. So, you know, and it's not a crazy term on the deal, you know, only a 3-year extension. So it's I think it's a pretty good deal.
I mean, and Trent Williams really only got slightly above what David Bakhtiari got. So, I mean, $23 million was already kind of like the top line for left tackles, and he just went like 23.01. So I don't know if they would have got much of a discount.
I think, you know, by the time the extension kicks in, it's going to be, the cap is going to go way up because of the TV deals, and $18 million might not look like that much, especially for a left tackle who he has some trouble run blocking at times, but I mean, he's one of the better pass protecting left tackles in the league, and that's extremely valuable, as we've seen.
Yeah, see, when I give my left tackle $18 million a year, I don't want to hear he has some trouble sometimes doing this. I would hope for that money I'm getting really, really good. I think Colton is pretty good. I don't know if he's an elite left tackle. I think he's definitely gotten better over the last couple of years. I think he's fine. He's good. To me, it's a little ironic that, you know, they overpaid these guys. They let go, like, you know, Trent, Gabe Jackson, and Rodney Hudson. And now they're kind of a little bit, I think, right now, at least overpaid maybe too soon, both Andre James and Colton Miller. So, obviously, these are their guys going forward. Like you guys said, in a couple of years, these deals may not seem like they're much. But right now, it seems like a little bit much for a guy who I don't think is a great left tackle.
The Andre James extension was pretty surprising to me. I mean, it just feels like they didn't have to do it. They could have waited to see him on the field to see if he could perform. And even, you know, maybe he doesn't even win a starting job against Nick Martin. I mean, there's a small chance of that happening, but just surprised that they came out and extended him. I mean, I guess that means they're really sure that he's going to be a good player, and they think that they could maximize his value with that deal.
Yeah, I was going to say on Colton, I mean, they didn't have to extend him now. You know, they could have, you know, accepted his fifth-year rookie option and had him in a contract through the 2022 season. And then from there, they could have franchise-tagged him if they wanted to. So they could have pushed this down, you know, a couple more years when it comes to agreeing to a long-term deal. But I think they're banking on him continuing to improve. I mean, he's only going into, you know, what is his fourth season. And, you know, let's say he goes out and he does play like a top-five tackle next year, then that number is probably higher than $18 million a year when you come to talking to him about a long-term extension. So they may be hopeful that this kind of turns into a Darren Waller situation where they agree to a – not to say that, you know, Colton's going to become that tier player, but, you know, you agree to the deal early and then the player eventually surpasses, you know, what you're paying them relative to the market.
Yeah, I was going to bring up the Darren Waller comp because, I mean, that seems like what they're hoping this is. With Waller – by the time they signed that extension, had pretty good signs that, man, this guy is going to be really special. You know, and with Colton, I mean, they've seen 3 full years of playing time. So if they're buying into it, I can see that. Yeah. The Andre James, though, like you said, Ted, I mean, he played one game. They love him. And I mean, $4 million a year for a starter on the offensive line isn't huge money, but it felt like part of what they were doing with trying to shed money on that offensive line was like, okay, let's go younger, let's go cheaper. And, you know, that was an opportunity to go really cheap at center, and then now they've kind of blown that out of the water. And I mean, again, if a couple years from now when he would be unrestricted free agent and due for money, you know, he would be more than that. So maybe you get a year or so of a discounted deal. But that one, it doesn't make a whole lot of sense until you see him play a little more.
Yeah. And I think, you know, it's only, I think $6 million of it is guaranteed. So I think, you know, let's say he's a disaster this year, I think they could move on next year if they want to. I guess they brought in Nick Martin as kind of the insurance policy at center. He's, you know, the 4-year starter with the Texans. And so, you know, if Andre James is a bust, he can start in his place and be, you know, serviceable at least. But yeah, like you guys said, it just seems weird that, you know, especially since you signed another center, you're not completely certain, obviously, you know, so why not wait until training camp or maybe into the season, see what you have. And then, you know, once he shows his stuff a little bit, then you come in with the extension. So it definitely seems like they jumped the gun a bit with them there. But obviously, you know, I mean, you get rid of a player like Rodney Hudson, you know, arguably the best center in the league. You know, of course, they must love Andre James. So
it also could be a case where John sees the reaction like around the league and all these national people saying that Raiders are blowing it. You know, Kenyon Drake signed made no sense. They got rid of Rodney Hudson, the best center in the league. What are they doing? He's wants to double down. You know what, guys? I know what I'm doing. Hey, I'm giving this guy $12 million. That's my bad Gruden accent. I can't resist. But
remember, we know, agreed. It's, not a, doing
it's a
Gruden
mental
accents.
Slip up. I try not to, but sometimes
it's hard to
avoid.
Just
like I can see. Yeah, I see. When I mention, I see him talking, and I just go into that voice. So yeah, it's really a bad one, also. But I do a bad job. But yeah, I just think maybe it's, you know, they want to make sure that people realized that they know what they're doing and they definitely have a plan. They obviously like Andre James a lot, and I think they're pretty confident he'll be good. So in their minds, it's not really that big a deal.
So we're paying him just to prove how good he is.
And once he is that good, you have him locked up for 3 years at least. You're not worried about him at all. And it's not, like you said, when the money goes up in the, you know, next year or whatever, I mean, I don't know, Andre James is going to demand a huge deal in the market, but you never know. I mean, you're at least you have a guy who, I think also with the Raiders, I mentioned this, like we've talked about this in the past, is they've developed so few guys. So I mean, in terms of good guys that they've drafted late in the rounds or even early round picks, I mean, they've had a really bad track record. So you got two guys this year in Andre James and Nick Morrow, guys who were undrafted, totally developed through the system. The Raiders, you know, brought them up, nurtured them, and fed them, and they've grown to be, you know, pretty good players, I think. So I think they wanted to show that they can develop guys, and there definitely is a reward for guys who work hard in their organization.
You know, and that's a good point, because one thing we talked about on the last show was, you know, what is this doing for the locker room that they're getting rid of these veteran guys that trying these tactics on them beforehand where, you know, we're not going to cut you until training camp unless you take a pay cut. We were kind of wondering how this would impact the culture. Well, maybe this is kind of their counter to those potential negative impacts to the culture, that they are showing young guys that they can be rewarded. So that's a good point, where maybe where we're concerned for other reasons that this culture could be impacted negatively, they're trying to find ways to kind of positively impact the culture and kind of inspire some of the young guys.
I can see that. At first, I wasn't buying fixed point, but now I see it. I think that's a good point.
I helped you come around,
you know, the Waller extension. Yes. You completed the point. Also, the Waller extension was one of the smartest moves this front office has made. So maybe they're like, all right, that worked out. Maybe we could apply it to these other guys and it'll work out too. But yeah, I mean, we'll see what happens with James. It was a little early, but if he ends up being a star, then it'll be a deal.
The two best moves that the John Gruden Raiders have made were signing Darren Waller from the Ravens practice squad and signing Darren Waller to an early extension.
That's true.
There's probably some others that have been good, but I think those are probably the two best moves that they made since Gruden's back, right? I mean, what else is in that category?
At this point, you know, they traded back to get Colton Miller at 15 in 2018, this first draft, and now you're signing him to, you know, an extension. I think he's the first round pick from the 2018 draft to agree to a multi-year extension, if I'm not wrong. So I would count that as a win, too. So maybe that's a top three.
That's a win. And obviously there's that funny stat where he's the first Raiders first rounder since Darren McFadden in 2008 to get a second contract with the team. So. Yeah,
Jesus, I was 12 years old back then.
And McFadden only got a 1-year extension. It's not like he even got signed to a multi-year deal. We've referenced the Kenyon Drake signing a little bit. You know, we didn't get into that on the last show because it happened right after we got done recording. It's a deal that obviously in the first year, very affordable, $3 million deal for a really good, not just backup running back, but a complimentary back, a guy that, as Vic wrote, might play some receiver. He can do a lot of different things for this offense. He can help keep Josh Jacobs fresh. You know, the concern is that in year two, you basically have two options, right? You can pay him $8.5 million to be on the team and be a backup / complimentary back, or you can pay him, I think, $5 or $5.5 million to not be on the team. That's where you start wondering, okay, why did he get $11 million guaranteed? Why so much money in that second year? But for year one, I mean, $3 million for a really good complimentary / backup back, I think no argument there. It's that second year where he's expensive to keep and expensive to get rid of that you wonder.
Yeah, like I almost would have liked it better if they would have just, let's say, pay him, I don't know, $6 million on a 1-year deal for this year. And people are kind of getting on this like, oh, they're only paying him $3 million, take it back, like all your slander. I'm like, okay, well, you're still signed up to pay a backup running back $8 million next year when, like, part of the reason you traded guys like Rodney Hudson and Gabe Jackson is to free up money in 2022. And then you're going to spend
Kenyon Drake. They were freeing up money for Kenyon Drake.
On a backup running back. So it's still like, I still don't read it. Like he's a good player. Like it's not, as I think those people misunderstood, like it's not about Kenyon Drake. Like that's an awesome backup running back. And you're arguably now the best backup running back in the league, probably. But I just don't think that was the best allocation of funds and that you didn't need to negotiate that way. Cause I mean, what other running backs have really gotten huge deals this offseason?
By far the most like guaranteed money of any of the similar guys in the market. I think Raider fans know it's too much money. I mean, the complaints were not about, like you said, one about his quality of play. He's obviously a really good player, but it's too much money. I think Raider fans know that. They probably were like, why? Why are we doing this? But then when they read us saying it, and they're like, you know, they're like, wait, you can't say that. I can say that. You can't say it was too much money. That's a good deal because they want to have hope. They want to have some optimism. I just think it doesn't make a lot of sense. For a team that's really allocated a first-round pick to a running back, to spend, you know, $11 million for 2 years for a number two running back. And again, he could play a lot. It could be a receiver. Who knows? And hopefully they use him a lot. But in this day and age, the way that the game is run by teams, the good teams, that's a lot of capital to spend on the running back position.
I thought they were being smart, actually, about allocating some funds away from the interior line because that's not exactly high on the positional value chart. They save money there, and then they take that money and they spend it on running back, which is a low positional value, I think lowest out of all the non-kicker punter positions. And then it's not even a starting running back, it's your second running back. And, you know, no matter what you say, like, oh, we're going to use him to do this and that, Josh Jacobs is going to be on the field the majority of the time. You know, if he's not on the field 70% of the time, then you're doing something wrong. And if you're going to pay all that money for a guy that might be on the field 30% of the time, it just doesn't make a lot of sense.
Another thing is, like, with the offensive line, like, even best case scenario, let's say Andre James is, like, a competent starter. They draft the right tackle who can come in and start day one. Richie Incognito is healthy and everything's good health-wise up front. You're still probably going to be a step back in the quality of play and offensive line from last year, even though they were banged up last year. And you have Josh Jacobs getting most of the carries. I mean, you know, it might be a struggle for Josh Jacobs to get a lot of yards, you know, if the offensive line takes a step back, because he didn't have his most efficient year last year. And so I don't know how much more success Drake is going to have doing that. And then, you know, even splitting them out to receiver, you know, the Raiders don't really target receivers that often. I think they had the lowest percentage of passes that went to receivers last season. You know, obviously that could change from year to year, but I don't see it drastically changing. They'll probably still be toward the bottom of the league. And, you know, especially if the offensive line has some struggles, you know, you may have to, you know, do more multiple tight end or bring in Alec Engle at fullback for some extra blocking. And so it's just kind of hard to see Drake playing enough, or even if he's on the field, being active enough in the game plan to really be worth the kind of money that they're throwing at him.
I was going to say, it appears that it's probably a lot more money than he was going to get anywhere else. I think they may have been leveraging, you know, competing against themselves as far as the market goes. I know Drake said how much he liked John Gruden, and he wants that Alabama backfields together again, and he's excited about it. But clearly, they offered him a lot more money than anybody else did. He's like, yeah, I'm going to go there. I think I'm going to go to Las Vegas. So I just think that in hindsight, if you want a guy that badly, you got to hold back a little bit and not spend $11 million over 2 years.
And I think the other thing is what we've seen with the running back position is that if you can identify guys in the draft really well, I mean, you can find guys in the third round, fourth round, wherever, that can be that type of backup complementary back. I mean, if you trust your scouting, maybe they're not quite Kenyon Drake, but or as proven as Kenyon Drake, but that's the part where you wonder, like, okay, could you not identify somebody in the draft that could do this? That would obviously be a lot more affordable, but it's spent money. It is what it is, and we'll see. I mean, I know a lot of people want to say, like, watch when the Raiders have the best running back duo in the league this year. You guys are going to be saying something different. And it's not about the fit. It's not about that he's not a good player. It's just it was the value there. Probably not, but hey, that's what the Raiders do, and we'll see how it works out.
Can Drake do a lot better job than Booker did last year? I don't know. Booker was really good last year. I mean, I think, to me, I always said that was option one, bring him back. I mean, he got $2.5 million guaranteed for this year with the Giants, but I just thought the way he played last year, he gave him an extra boost when he came in. Obviously, he can't play a receiver like I guess Drake can, and he's a different player, but to me, when a guy plays that well, and if it's a fit, I mean, he would fit in terms of the locker room and to the offense, I think you run it back for a lot less money. That's what I would have done.
We'll be right back after a quick word from our sponsors.
Looking for an assist with your credit card, but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. Customers are rushing to your store. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. Shopify POS is your command center for your retail store. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify has everything you need to sell in person. With Shopify, you get a powerhouse selling partner that effortlessly unites your in-person and online sales into the one source of truth. Track every sale across your business in one place and know exactly what's in stock. Connect with customers in line and online. Shopify helps you drive store traffic with plug-and-play tools built for marketing campaigns from TikTok to Instagram and beyond. Get hardware that fits your business. Take payments by smartphone, transform your tablet into a point-of-sale system, or use Shopify's POS Go mobile device for a battle-tested solution. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Do retail right with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/theathletic, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/theathletic to take your retail business to the next level today. shopify.com/theathletic.
Where do the Raiders still need to improve? What do they still need to do? And I think we all keep just sitting here twiddling our thumbs, waiting for them to sign a safety. You know, they'll probably sign a safety by the time we finish recording or shortly after, just to screw up this podcast. But I mean, do we have any guesses as to why they've not really addressed that position? Do they not like the guys that are out there? Who is still out there they can go get? Are they going to have to address this early in the draft, even though we've kind of heard them grumble about the fact that they have used a lot of early draft picks in recent years on that secondary?
Another thing about the Drake deal, that kind of one more thing, like he's making $3 million this year, and Anthony Harris signed with the Eagles for $4 million this year, and he's a starting free safety in this league who's good at being a center fielder. So anyway, like of the remaining guys, I know people ask us a lot about Trey Boston. The thing about him is like the last 2 years, he's missed a ton of tackles, like a lot of tackles. I think he missed like the highest percentage of tackles last season for a starting safety. And so, you know, that was already an issue last year, so I don't know if they exactly want to sign up for more of that. Kenny Vaccaro, you know, he played some free safety last year, but he's more of a box safety. I actually like Daron Harmon, though. He played with the Lions last year. He used to be with the Patriots, but he started for the Lions last year, and he was pretty solid. He's a veteran guy who's played and covered three schemes before, so I don't think he should cost too much money and probably be on a one-year deal. It's kind of like a veteran, you know, stopgap option. But even with that, like let's say they do sign Harmon, I still do think they should draft a safety with one of their first two picks in the draft because they're going to need a long-term option at some point.
Yeah, there's also like Bradley McDougal's out there. There's a handful of guys they probably have circled who are probably, they've all started to have experience, they can play, but you don't want to spend a lot of money on these guys. So there's probably maybe some parameters or some offers out there to these guys. And I think last year they signed Demaryius Randall pretty late and he was going to start. I don't know what happened at camp, but he missed some practices and it all fell apart. But that was the plan. He was going to be the starting safety when he came in for like $1 million and change. So I think they're probably in the same boat now. They're like, you know what, we'll address that position at some point. The market's definitely slowed down. No reason to pay a guy more than we have to now. We have plenty of time. And we can draft a safety, if not in the first round, at some point. But probably won't be a starter. I think the guy they bring in off the street will be the starting free safety. I can't see Jeff Heath playing free safety.
That's the problem. Like, if you draft a safety and it's not a sure first-round pick type of safety, you know, I think safety is one of the hardest positions to evaluate. So you put yourself in position to reach for a guy too, especially at the safety position. I think at tackle, you're pretty safe because this is a really good tackle class. So you're not reaching if you draft at need, but for safety, if you know, you're in a second round and safety is coming off the board, you might be in position where you have to reach and that guy might not be the starter you want. So that's why seeing these guys, these free safeties signed for not much is it's just kind of surprising that the Raiders aren't in a mix for a free safety, considering how important it is for this style of defense.
I will say I really do like Richie Grant, though. When I was down in the Senior Bowl earlier this year, he was like a player that during the practice, he really jumped out. I think Dan Brugger has him as his top-ranked safety now, but I think most teams view Trayvon Morrig as you know, a first-round prospect. I'm not sure that Richie Grant has that consensus view yet, so he may be a guy you can get in the second round. You know, with the Raiders having some extra picks in the third round and fifth round, like I'm not sure Richie Grant's going to fall to 48, but if you have to move up a few spots to get him in the second round, I think that would be a good pick as somebody who, you know, like I said, maybe doesn't start year one, but he can at least get into the rotation. And in year two, you know, once that veteran stopgap, you know, is off of that 1 year deal, then he can step in and then start alongside, you know, assumably Jonathan Abram back there in the backfield and stuff. I think that would probably be the approach that I would take, draft one of those veteran safeties to, you know, be your surefire starter. And then try to get either Morrig or Grant in the draft. But I guess one other veteran we're not mentioning, former Seahawk cover three, Earl Thomas. So I don't know if we're putting any credence to that. I mean, I know he didn't play last year, but they're at the bottom of the barrel at this point when it comes to these veteran safeties. So I don't think it's like impossible. Like as long as they're waiting, like who else is going to be left?
I think he has so much baggage, he's out of the barrel. I think he's fallen out of the barrel. He's not in the bottom of the barrel. I think I haven't heard his name once. I just think, because people always want to tie Gus to these guys he's had before, but a lot of cases, if he hasn't signed them now, he probably doesn't want them. There's probably some bad reasons, like you mentioned Trey Boston, maybe the tackling issue is a problem there, but there's probably reasons why he hasn't got him yet. Like the guys he targeted, like Rayshon Jenkins, were gone, but other guys maybe too old. Maybe they can't be as fast as Gus wants in his defense. So I think Earl Thomas is not really an offer. I've not heard his name once. I just think that the league pretty much, you know what, that guy has got a lot of issues, and he's older now, so we're not even sure what we're getting if he's good as far as getting on the field and not having problems. So I have not heard that name at all. You do hear the other guy is Richard Sherman. I think that's still a possibility. I think he's kind of going at his own speed. I think there was a tweet. He's in Vegas right now at some casino at a pool party, so he's nearby. I think they've talked, you know, him and Gruden were colluding in the one podcast a while back, so definitely could be a match. I think he could definitely play right away. So that's one guy who may happen before long.
He also played one snap of free safety last season too. So
don't see that. Now I'm going to get 10 more questions.
There you go.
So are they going to put him at safety? Yeah. Jesus Christ. No.
Can you write a film breakdown of that one play of free safety? Ted,
yeah, please.
I'll tag both you and Tashaun in it. I don't know.
No, no, no. We need a whole entire story. I need 1,500 words.
Story.
1,500 words on that one snap. One thing that when you look at how they've built this team now through free agency and the fact that they still have those glaring holes, they don't have anybody who can step in and start at free safety. They don't have, in our minds at least, anybody who can step in and start at right tackle. That does concern me a little bit going into the draft because, you know, this is not a talented enough roster to be drafting for need. You know, Vic, your kind of line going into this offseason was that they need to, through free agency or the draft, whatever, they need to bring in two guys on defense that are the two best players on their defense. And maybe Yannick Ngakoue is one of those two, but they haven't brought in the other. And I don't know that they can get a guy at 17 that's going to be the right fit to be the second best player on their defense now, especially now that they have, like we said, they've got two starting spots that we don't see anybody on the roster that is capable of even filling those on a temporary basis, really.
Well, I know we're not a big Brandon Parker like a podcast. We're like we're kind of become an anti Brandon Parker, the poor guy. But I think he's
Ted wrote a wave. Ted had was high on him for like a week.
We praised him. Yeah, I've never praised him when he played.
Yeah,
well.
You backtrack quick though. Next week you're like, this guy's awful. You killed the guy. You built him up and you like took the sledgehammer and you destroyed the guy. But I think
I don't
he's
know
fine
what happened.
I think he's fine for a while. I think if you drafted the right tackle, saying
well, he's fine to do what.
To start for a couple games, like a stopgap guy. I think he won't kill you, and he might even get better. I mean, Tom Cable seems to think there's something there still. So, I don't think that's a great plan, but I don't think that it will hurt you that much if he's your starting right tackle for the first handful of games next season.
Nah, man, nah. Yeah, they got to draft one. I think one of the first two picks. Like maybe not. And I know I'm a big Tevin Jenkins guy, but I even think with the 48, if you get somebody like Samuel Cosmi, or you know, if Alex Leatherwood falls that far, one of the guys that I think there's a good amount of offensive linemen that can come in and be day one starters, or like you said, very early on in the season, but they have to have somebody else as some kind of fallback option to not even a fallback option, a primary option to start at some point and just kind of ease them into it. I do think like on the two best players on the defense, though, I do think like they kind of, I mean, they got to be hoping that, you know, Corey Littleton is going to be one of those guys, right? I mean, I know he played pretty rough last season, but, you know, he was adjusting to the new system. He had COVID, you know, all that stuff. So I think they would hope that he's one of their best two defensive players this season with all the money they're still paying him. So maybe this year it's Jan and Corey Littleton, and maybe that's not as – unless, you know, I guess the only scenario maybe is if somehow – because I know there's some off-field concerns that are a little weird because nobody has, like, a particular incident. But if Micah Parsons somehow fell to 17, or if they – he was close enough and they trade up and grab him, maybe, you know, he's talented enough to where he could be that guy.
All right, let's take some questions because we've got enough draft-related questions that we can hit some of these other topics. We got this one from Joubert A. He says, looking more like an OT and safety is drafted in the top three rounds, but who in another position would be too good to pass up at 17? So basically, if they don't take one of those positions of need, what's another guy at a different position that you would be unable to pass up at 17?
I think Parsons is that guy for me.
I think Barmore, the D tackle from Alabama, if he falls there's a chance that I think they look at him because they did sign a bunch of D tackles, but Barmore has a chance to be a force up the middle. So I think if you're going to go away from tackle or free safety at that first spot, he might be the guy.
I might say pass rusher. I think if you really think there's one out there that can make an impact, if not right away, but soon. Obviously, they don't have, I mean, they added Ngakoue and they still got Max and Klee. But, you know, if you always can add a young guy who's dynamic in that aspect, you probably should do it. So I think I just finished the story on Kwadipe, and there's the two guys from Miami who are pretty good. So if they fell in love with those guys and they're there at 17, or maybe they trade back down a little bit, maybe that's a possibility.
All right. Question here from Obina O. Do you see Amik Robertson beating out Nevin Lawson and gaining the coach's trust to become the starting nickel cornerback? Based on the evidence we saw in the limited time he played last year, I'd say no, but that's what training camp for, right?
Yeah, I think a lot depends on what they do with the other. If they sign another cornerback, a veteran guy who plays outside, do they move Arnett inside? That's a possibility. I think Yeah, I think Amik may be more geared towards the outside, and I don't know where Keyshawn Nixon fits in either. But it's tough because Gus Bradley hasn't really talked to us about, you know, what he wants to do as far as the secondary. I know he must have some strong opinions about these guys from last year watching them on film. So we'll have to wait and see on that until training camp, I guess.
I like Roberson's film coming out of college. I think he has a lot of potential. But yeah, I mean, we'll see how he fits into this system as a nickel corner and if he can make those improvements. But I definitely think they could use a veteran backup at nickel as well.
That kind of fits into what Jack C. asked. He says, what are the chances we draft a cornerback in the first round and bump Damon Arnette inside? I think his play is better suited at nickel, in my opinion.
I don't love this cornerback class. I don't think I would take one at 17. I know J.C. Horn probably would be the one that you would, but I think we're more so maybe in the second round range, if maybe somebody like Asante Samuel Jr. is on the board. I actually think Arnette is better at an outside corner with his size and play style. But like Asante Samuel Jr., I think he's probably a nickel at the next level. So you can keep your 19th overall pick from last year outside, which is what I assume they wanted him to be when they drafted him 19th overall. And then go get a guy that you can start long term at that nickel spot. Because, I mean, that's a really important position, obviously, in Bradley's defense with him being in a 4-2-5 base most of the time. So I do think they need to upgrade over you know, Nevin Lawson for this year. But I think it probably comes down to how much he likes Amik Robertson. You know, does he think he can actually develop? If not this year, but next year, can he become your slot corner? If so, then I think they kind of stay away from cornerback in the draft and try to go get some veterans in free agency.
Arnette does have the skills to play inside and play a nickel. I don't know if he's a better fit in there, but he definitely has some of those traits that you look for in a nickel corner. And who knows if Pat, you know, if Surtain the second drops down to 17, you know, he comes from Alabama. We know Gruden and Mayock love Alabama players, and Surtain is a perfect fit into a cover three system. And maybe they do look at Arnette inside. So I don't see them drafting a corner, but if Surtain drops there, you know, there's a chance.
Yeah, I'm with you, Tashawn. I don't love this cornerback class. Part of my editing responsibilities this last week have been we're all divvying up Dane Brugler's The Beast that's coming out soon, guys, all the draft profiles. And so I just spent this week reading about every single cornerback who could possibly get drafted or signed as an undrafted free agent. And let's just say by like the fifth or sixth name, I was the scouting report said that this guy projected as a backup nickel cornerback. And that had me concerned about the depth of this cornerback class.
You don't like Melifonwu?
I can't draft him. Now the scouting report on him, I'll give you a sneak preview, does say there. I texted this to Vic. It said something along the lines of he loves football and doesn't have the same kind of concerns that his brother had. A reference to the fact that his there were concerns about his brother not loving football, and says that he does have seem to love football a little bit more than Obi did. But Obi's with the 49ers. We'll see if I don't know if he'll ever actually make it in the league, but. All right. Before we get out of here, though, we want to say a happy anniversary to Sean Reed. 1 year on the Raiders beat as of Thursday. And he didn't realize this till I mentioned it to him, but it's kind of appropriate. He started the beat on April Fool's Day. So it's been I don't know what the built in joke there is, but some irony there. But how's the first year on the beat been, Tashawn?
It's been unusual. It's probably the best word. I mean, I don't know. Vic, I don't know how your first year in the league was, but I mean, covering the league during a pandemic and basically, even though I'm on the ground here in Vegas, like essentially covering a team remotely was definitely interesting. It was challenging, of course, but I think I learned a lot from it being kind of set up this way, and it'll help me moving forward on the beat. It was obviously a tough year for a lot of us personally with everything going on in the world. So it was nice to have, like, I wouldn't say a distraction, but something that I could kind of put my focus to that I enjoyed and was fun and kind of light. You know, I mean, I know Raiders fans weren't too happy with this season, but it was still fun for me following along on the journey. So it was a great time, but I'm definitely excited to hopefully get kind of more in the teeth this year and like actually get in the locker room and meet some of these guys and ask Derek Carr why he blocked me in person.
It was kind of cool. You got out to, in a way, kind of raise a glass to your first
year
yesterday.
You got a party last night. Yeah.
Yeah, yesterday. Yeah. How was that? The Raiders, it's called Raiders Tavern. Is that what it's called?
Yeah, it's pretty nice. I think it's Raiders Tavern and Grill. You know, it's obviously, you know, it's brand new, so everything looks all fancy and stuff. And every time you walk past somebody, they're smiling and saying welcome, and you know, super animated. But the food was actually pretty good. Unfortunately, you know, they didn't ask me how I like my steak cooked, so I had to eat some rare steak.
Oh, it wasn't terrible.
Had unlimited drinks, you know, and they had some Charles Woodson wine, and I don't think they had his bourbon yet, but they had his wines there, and I got to try that, so that was pretty good. Oh yeah, Charles Woodson was there, and I had like an interaction on Twitter where, like, people were talking about the best DBs of the 2000s, and I was like, oh, it's Ed Reed, and like Charles Woodson was in there, and I didn't know he was there, and then I saw him like 5 minutes later. I'm like, oh shit. but no, it was cool. It was nice, and like the prices were honestly like reasonable. I didn't expect that. Like, you get some chicken wings for like $12. I thought it was gonna be like $20 for like everything, and $30, and even like the steak was like $30. So like, seems like it's pretty like a reasonable chill spot out here in Henderson. So I might be making a return trip sometime soon.
Future podcast location, right?
Yeah, I think so. They got some nice booths in there. Some outdoor seating if we want to.
Yeah, for those that don't know, Tashawn likes eating his steak like hockey puck style. Well done. So
Listen. Medium well. Don't slander me on that.
The Raiders made him eat a medium rare steak yesterday, and he enjoyed it. So that's big news for him.
Yeah, see, you would get along well with my wife. She won't eat a steak if it's got pink in there. That's why I got to, like, I get the tri-tip from Costco, because I can put that on the grill, and you know, it's got the edges that'll get a little more cooked, and I can give her the edges, and then I get the middle of it where it's still got some pink in there. So that's where it works out the best of both worlds.
I still get the pink. I just don't get the red like Ted. Like, he cooks it for like half a second and he's eating it. Like, no.
He just puts it out in the sunlight for 2 minutes, and then he's all right to get it. And that might work in Vegas. Vic still let us down.
He never cooked
any food on his car.
Cookies. He's supposed to bake the cookies.
So I want him to fry an egg.
My dad, when he was around, he used to order steaks, and he used to embarrassment as a kid. He used to ask for them bloody. I was like, oh. The Raiders like, what? Yeah, I want a bloody. I want, like, not just pink, but like a little blood. I'm like, holy smokes. But yeah, different strokes, different folks. But yeah, so I definitely I can see both sides.
All right. Well, hopefully soon enough, we'll all be able to get together in Vegas together and get ahead over there and maybe record a podcast. The world is starting to turn back into slightly normal again, but that'll be fun to all get together there at some point, maybe as next season gets underway. And I mean, all the talk is the NFL is planning to have full stadiums next year. So that would be exciting for the Raiders as they try to officially get their Vegas tenure, get Allegiant Stadium going with some fans. So should be fun. But I think that'll wrap up this week's show. We'll be back probably sometime soon, maybe in a couple of weeks, to help you get really even more prepared for the NFL draft. It's coming. The Raiders, they're going to try to see what they can do. I mean, they're going to need to obviously find ways to address some of their openings, but still need to try to add some talented players to this team. And we'll try to get you all ready for that draft in a few weeks.
Cool. See you guys.
All right. Talk to you guys later.
Adios. I think there's a little bit of a warm sensation on his bum right now, probably.